Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. All our microphones are on, all our headsets work. The second hour is always a lot less
we're all tuned up,
dramatic. How's that?
Yeah.
So we have our guest on for the second hour is the same guy who was on the first hour. And if you missed it, you should go back and listen to it in the archives. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape right now is geared up for the hot weather electrical shutdown that we're going to experience here in California.
More things
to look forward to. So if you need a generator, go by and see them. They also handle the Honda product line. And they've got lots of Honda generators on the floor and ready to go. You can go by and see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or give them a call at 226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And we live in a riot-free zone, so feel free to go there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's parking and everything.
There's parking.
It's kind of great.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So our guest today is William Walter Kay. I added his middle name because it makes him sound more official. He lives in Alberta, Canada. And he writes a lot for the Canada Free Press and also for the Global Research website. It's a center for research on globalism. I've put those links on there for you. And he runs a website called ecofascism.com. No trick spelling there, just ecofascism.com. And really good information, very, very well researched. So, you know, William, unlike so many people out there who just, you know, kind of want to shoot their mouth off with all their, you know, beliefs and all that. He actually does the research and attempts to inform people. It's mm-hmm. a whole new idea. It's kind of what our media used to do, but sort of, you know.
Yeah, that was before your time, William.
That was a rumor that, you know, that was what they were there for, but
that's a myth of the modern media created. They were once good and now
they were
bad,
once amazing and
they were always bad. Yeah.
Now they're in the tank, but you know, before they weren't.
That's not how we just notice how bad they are. We're wiser, that's all.
Hey, so before we get off on something else, I just was thinking during the break, I was curious, in your research. Okay, so the statistics and all the things that we've seen for this COVID-19 thing are that it affects the elderly disproportionately. But
correct.
In light of the fact that the highest death rate was in a place where they put the elderly in a position to where they would die more often. I mean, do you think it really, based on your research, is it because of the patient seating, or is it really because?
Oh yeah, there are several jurisdictions around the world where it's pretty obvious they did patient seating. What they did in Montreal was more confinement. There's a bit of mention of actual sending patients in, but they just suddenly imposed a rule that no nursing home could send a COVID-19 patient to a hospital. And over time, you'll get the same effect because they're just not equipped to manage that sort of, you know, the proper infection control, and it gets around the whole hospital. It wasn't as bad in Montreal as it was in New York. But there's other places out around the world. It's the key to understanding the pandemic is how geographically different it is. There's the area in northern Italy, starting with Lombardy and a few little provinces around it, just astronomical death count, and they were the first place to get hit. And there's a correlation. The higher the absolute number of deaths, the greater percentage those deaths are in nursing homes. That's another reason why we know that New York is lying about their nursing home death count. I mean, they're coming in at 25% of all deaths. You know, New York, Rhode Island, 55 to 75%. Montreal, over 90%. You get into Lombardy, these places, it's always over 50% of these massive death counts. And they're not even counting all the workers that were infected as well, nor is anyone commenting on all of the people who were infected by people who were first infected in these nursing homes. Because mm-hmm. those workers, they had lives. They were going mm-hmm. out, you know, socializing. They had families and what have you. I think ultimately they're going to show that, like, where there was no seating, you get a California, you know, 100 per million. Where there's seating, you get, you know, 1,000 to, you know, 1,800 per million. Like in places like Brooklyn, over 2,000. Madrid in Spain, like there's a province in Spain called the Community of Madrid, and it's basically the city of Madrid. Same thing. They were the first region to follow Lombardy's lead. Lombardy started this practice, and they were initially exaggerating the death count, but you see the same phenomenon take over. These people started this season. I suspect it might have been done in earlier pandemics, but there was five or six specific jurisdictions where it happened, and where it happened, monster death tolls. It's Belgium, it's Madrid, it's Northern Italy, it's New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and it's Montreal. And then later on, much later, England starts posting these high death tallies and other places. But there's definitely a timeline there. There was a sort of a domino effect. Undoubtedly, the first region to do it is Lombardy. And you had just this wave of deaths. And a lot of the other places, they tended to be exaggerating their deaths, and they were just sort of repackaging last year's sort of flu season death tallies. And then there are certain regions where, no, they are not faking it. Their aggregate deaths year over year are going through the moon, and it's almost all coming out of nursing homes, geriatric wings, detox facilities, other, you know, assisted adult living facilities. That is like the overwhelming portion, like
but
the
80-90% of it. There's also the number of deaths that are attributed to COVID that aren't really COVID. I mean, they just reported a guy in California got attacked by a shark and died of COVID. I mean,
yeah, exactly. That was in the early stages. I noticed that my first article I wrote, which is not on those lists, was about that. When this pandemic first started happening, I thought, no, this isn't that severe at all. They're dealing with people with extensive comorbidities. A lot of the patients were 90 years old and they had lung cancer, and the media and the governments were not properly articulating that to people. And my initial article was accusing them of jacking up their death counts. And then as time wore on, I realized in a lot of jurisdictions, they really weren't. Like the large parts of Western Canada, it's not 100 per million. It's like 6 per million. And there's states in the U.S. like that, like Montana, North Dakota. It just simply never happened at all.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at, as time wore on, you see these here massive death tallies start to emerge in places where it is not mere. Like in some places, you could say, look, if you compare it to last year's flu season, this isn't significantly different. There's been flu seasons in the U.S. where 70,000 people die. So there was a period in the early stages of the pandemic, I thought, they're just repackaging another year's flu statistics. Sure, there's going to be a lot of elderly people die. But then I started to notice that there were specific jurisdictions where the body count was just going through the moon. But it's very geographically specific. Now keep in mind that Boston-Newark area, well over half the deaths in the United States. If you take them out of the statistical equation, it's not nearly as bad.
Yeah. And
so that to me, the key understanding is just realizing just how geographically concentrated this is. And then the opposite is there's wide areas of the U.S., like Nebraska and Wyoming through there, almost no impact whatsoever. A few deaths, most of those elderly people. It was basically just a nasty flu bug was all that ever really happened. But in areas where there was pretty obviously a systematic seeding and confining of infectious COVID patients amongst the most vulnerable population, no, then you got something different on your hands.
And then
you've got this just massive body count.
Right. And you brought up confining. I think the whole stay-at-home thing didn't really help this situation at all either, did it?
Well, if you live alone, if it didn't, you're infecting everybody you're living where with. Like, that was sort of the other Cuomo brothers, his quarantine, when he wasn't even at home
for
parts of it.
Yeah. But he was in the basement.
That was complete nonsense. Trump had the right idea, same idea that President Xi of China has, just massive field hospitals. Anybody who tests positive, no, you don't go home, hang out with your family, hang out with your friends. No, that's not a quarantine.
No.
No, you go into this facility where all you're going to see is people in hazmat suits for 2 weeks, and then you're going to leave, they're going to give you just the right diet and medication, and you're going to be fine. But Trump sent 4,000 bed spaces in the Javits Center and the U.S. Navy ship Comfort early April. Those 4,000 patients that those hospitals sent to the nursing homes, every one of them could have been intercepted by those field hospitals.
Yeah.
Not a single person would have went back to a nursing home. They would have went into a proper military-grade quarantine, and you would be monitored until you were well, and then you would leave. You know, and if that's the response you should have. If there's going to be a massive wave like this, yeah, you're right. I mean, this idea of go home and quarantine, well, that is nonsense. Like, that isn't a quarantine at all.
Right.
Well, in a lot of places they did, but let's face it, in lots of places they didn't. When we come back, I want to know from you when it started to become public that the nursing home thing was caused by people being sent back and what was done kind of on the heels of that. I'm kind of curious what your research showed for that, because I haven't really looked at that. So we are here discussing all this horribleness with our guest, William Alter Kay. He is from Alberta, Canada. We love our Canadian friends, although we haven't had him on for like 2 years, so our bad.
Yeah.
We'll have to stop doing that. And so you're listening to We the People. You can find all these previous shows that are actually awesome and archives that go back about 10 years at wethepeopleradio.us. Apparently nothing, but anyway,
no,
it's kind of a rhetorical question.
It's too late for you anyway.
So William, did they at some point admit that they you know, did they try to throw up the old, uh-oh, we made a mistake, and reverse course, or did they just sort of let it roll?
Well, they reversed the order. The March 25th order was reversed on May the 10th, which is sort of an admission, but they never actually came out and said, oh, that was a big mistake. They just announced this whole new program of stringent tests and regulations. There was no me bad in that. Because they're using bogus statistics on deaths in nursing homes, Cuomo's telling people that New York State is 32nd on the list in terms of percentage of COVID deaths being in nursing homes.
What?
Well, they're just not counting them. There's a huge number. Anybody, if they can get them on an ambulance out the door before they CAC, that's not counted as a nursing home. And that's been what they've been doing since April the 16th.
Wow.
So you got to presume that their percentage of COVID deaths that are nursing home deaths is going to be the same as it is in the neighboring states and in other places where there's been these huge absolute number of deaths. And that puts them in the 70% category. And that's the circus that no one wants to say, that the death count's probably already over 20,000 in New York State. They're claiming 6,000 have died in nursing homes in New York State. Fox ran an article 5 days ago. It was probably the best article so far. And they were saying 10,000 or more. But that is still an underestimation. The law, I can tell if it's a controlled opposition article or an article that's been planted to protect or to cover up the dirty deed. If they will totally lowball the numbers. They said, you know, they're acting like they're uncovering this crime, and then they'll mention that there could be as many as 5,000 nursing home deaths in New York State. No, it's probably already over 20,000. New Jersey's over 6,000. Massachusetts approaching 5,000. Those are the official numbers, and they also are suppressing it. So this is a scandal of humongous proportions.
You mentioned changing courses, and you know, not to get off the subject, but have you done any research on Dr. Fauci? And
oh, that's right. We
and I mean, that. He was the authority on this thing from the very beginning, and it just seems like he's changed his mind so many times. Can we really trust his research.
Well, he's sort of a classic bureaucrat. That little agency, it's not a little agency, it's a multi-billion dollar agency that deals with infectious diseases that he runs. He started working there like, what, 60 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And he just slowly wormed his way to the top. But I view that whole network, like there's, I forgot the name of the agency, it's not CDC, it's the U.S. Infectious Disease Research Facility or something.
Yeah.
But it's a multi-billion dollar grant-making institution, and it's got its own laboratories and things like that. But it's part of a sort of a global network, like with who a lot of countries have these sorts of things, and they're all integrated. And when I was mentioning earlier, I keep coming across these people that this ain't their first rodeo, like this is the umpteenth time they've had their nose into a
right,
pandemic.
Right.
He's a classic one of those.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was instrumental in the whole AIDS thing. I mean, he was buried in that, and I don't think a lot of people realize.
And they know how to farm it. These guys, you know, they view these big, and I was thinking, well, maybe COVID will never go away. Okay, well, maybe we need some giant international institution with billions of dollars of endowment to just sort of manage this disease that never goes away.
Exactly.
And we could have another 10,000 guys in white lab jackets running around with stethoscopes on their shoulders, consuming resources in some bonfire out back.
That's a great picture.
But you, I thought what you were going to say is like, when did people start to realize what was going on?
Oh, okay. You know, good question.
I was going to ask it.
Oh, sorry.
March 25th, Howard Zucker, Cuomo issued that letter. Obviously, they'd been doing this for about a week already. Zucker had been sending these patients over. Then they issue this letter saying, you guys are going to take these patients whether you like them or not. You're not going to test them whether you want to or not. They're coming. They're staying at your place. They start pouring large numbers of these patients in there. Within 24 hours of them issuing that letter, there were long-term healthcare associations and nursing home associations were issuing news releases. They were protesting it. They were denouncing it. There was organizations of nursing homes that were trying to organize petitions and protests so they could block these patients from coming. It was instantly understood in the nursing home community that this was a fiasco in
the
making.
Bad idea.
And some of those early news reports that these long-term care associations put out said, this is going to increase deaths and this is going to massively increase infections. And these letters were coming out within a day or two of that March 25th decree. So there was no mystery in the nursing home. There's a good video online of this one guy runs a nursing home. I think it was in Boston or or New York. They just dumped 58 patients on him. He's running a modern sort of well-to-do nursing home. He rips out walls in the facility. He builds this whole airtight chamber on the ground floor of the building. Like they had the renovation crews come in working around the clock to rip all these things out. They interviewed him. About a month or so into it, he said he'd already lost 50 long-term patients in his facility to COVID. Even doing this, like even going to the trouble of like ripping out whole walls and building these, you know, airtight chambers and what have you. And there was a lot of other facilities. They're in dormitories. They've got narrow corridors. They've got crappy, you know, 80-year-old ventilation. They eat in communal dining halls. They have shared bath facilities and stuff like that. You are absolutely not going to stop it from raging right across the facility.
Right.
And anybody, everyone knows that. And that the nursing homes were complaining instantly when it was happening. They were protesting it. So that's another reason why I don't think they're going to be able to keep it down. And there's a host of articles from local newspapers in the whole New York, Long Island area where they're just interviewing people who work at nursing homes, and they're making an estimate of how many dead people came out of that home, and they're comparing it to government stats. The New York Post did one. They did four nursing homes, and the difference was often a factor of 10. The New York State was saying, you know, 7 people came out of that home dead. The people who worked there said, no, over 70. That happened in Montreal as well. The provincial government was saying that this one facility had only had 30 or 40 deaths in it. The ambulance attendants held a little news conference, and they talked about just how many bodies they had been pulling out of this facility. And it was way above what the state was saying. There's probably 20 stories online now from sort of mainstream, more local media outlets in that area dealing exclusively with that issue, with a nursing home where the manager, staff, the operator is saying, no, there's been over 115 fatalities, and the state is saying, no, 20, 30. That story just gets repeated over and over again.
That's amazing. You know, and I do recall shortly after, I don't remember the date, but Como on one of his morning shows said that when this whole nursing home thing was kind of exposed, he said, oh, well, we were only following federal guidelines. Yeah. That's why we did it.
That is absolute BS.
Yeah.
The CDC had issued very specific instructions against not doing this and warnings about doing this. They cherry-picked some sentence fragment from an earlier CDC communique saying that, you know, you could, in an emergency, transfer patients to all kinds of facilities. You could transfer them to billiard halls if you wanted to. But they did say you could transfer them to nursing homes and that. But there's a presumption that they would be equipped to do it, that they would know that you're going to do it. They would just start showing up. And they would clear out whole wards, and they would do what they could to isolate that unit. But they weren't saying, here's a great idea. You know, let's just take the infected patients and just sprinkle them around all the nursing homes in the jurisdiction. I mean, you got to wonder, at what conversation did that come up?
Yeah,
like, that sounded like a good idea.
How are we going to manage the pandemic in New York? And someone goes, I got an idea. As the infected patients come into the emergency care ward, we just take them and drop them off at old folks' homes.
Yeah,
That's how we're going to manage the pandemic.
I hope all these people who lost relatives get some just raging class action suit going and expose this whole thing.
Oh, there's multiple suits launched. I honestly believe one of the reasons why they're keeping this no assembly thing going on is because they don't want the victims of that to start holding like conferences and rallying, because they're also very geographically concentrated. Mm-hmm. There's only that. There's that one photograph of that woman. She's taken a sheet and she's written "Como killed my mom" on it.
Ooh,
and she's hanging that over a freeway overpass. There are people. There's a lot of. Like, there's already hundreds of suits. When they lift the ban on public assembly, you better watch those people come together.
Yeah,
big
time.
Yeah, because you have that right on your article. The article, Howard Zucker's Scarlet Letter. It has a picture of that. Of that giant sheet that says, killed
so
my...
So those people like are out there, and they number in the thousands.
Yeah, and it's coming out. We're hearing more and more stories.
Well, there are too many people affected, and all those people had families, and they couldn't go visit them. They didn't know what happened.
All of a sudden, they just got a notice
and the moving
of
the COVID patients wasn't a secret. A lot of, when they do interviews with relatives, they say that, my aunt or my mother, whoever it was, called me and said, they're saying that they're moving COVID patients into the building. Like, it was no secret to the people, the residents and staff, that they were starting to send them in. But then, once again, like, within days, there's this one article about a woman who lost her mother, and that's what she said. Her mother called and said that, they're starting to bring COVID-19 patients into the building. Within 2 days, she couldn't get anyone to answer the phone there. There was no one at the front desk. The building just disintegrated. And, and dozens and dozens of people, including her mother, died. That story gets repeated over and over again.
And there was
it's just remarkable. Like, it's within a week, the organization just disintegrates.
Yeah, there was the weather lady at Fox, Janice Dean, maybe? Anyway, she had a very similar story about her mom. And you can only imagine. I mean, you look at the numbers, it's got to be a whole lot more people with the same. I have to take another really quick break, believe it or not. Our guest is William Kay. He is from Alberta, Canada, and does a ton of research. So these are always good shows for you to share with your friends and family. It's all the stuff that the media doesn't research anymore, if they ever did. And you can get people and help them get informed. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll be right back.
We have like less than a half hour. Tick, tick, tick. What are we missing in this? What have we not discussed? Not that I think you on this topic you ever run out of information because it just keeps going. What do you think we'll see next, though? Like, you have any indication of other things bubbling below the surface?
I actually believe that these race riots or whatever these events that are happening are a way of the media, and once again with their Democratic Party machine allies, are trying to change the topic. Like, up until those riots,
doing a pretty good job,
it was all COVID-19. And I think that the more this sort of scandal grows, the more anxious they are to change the channel. And remember that this is New York, New Jersey, Boston. This is a lot of the American mass media companies are headquartered there. They are very disproportionately influential in the country. That whole area there, the Democratic parties of those areas, all 10 senators from those states are Democrats. They absolutely dominate the electoral process at the state level. And at the mayoralty level as well, like almost all of the cities. Boston has had a Democratic mayor for 90 years now. It has all the features of a one-party state, a lot of that area. That the same government has been in power for so long. The New York State Assembly has had a Democratic majority since 1972. They've had the same chair of the New York State Assembly Health Committee, and that approves the entire health budget for New York State. They've had the same chair of that committee for 36 years.
Holy
His
cow.
His name is Gottfried, and he's a euthanasia fanatic.
Yikes.
And he's one of the people that's really been pushing to have I'm far more liberal euthanasia regime in New York State. They were just on the cusp of doing it. New Jersey just passed their euthanization bill, and the other four states each had one. Not that they were anticipating this, but it's kind of funny because in Canada there was this sort of news series. It was called "What Were You Doing Before the World Became Completely Unnormal?" What were you doing before this whole pandemic happened? And people were sending in photographs saying, "You know, I was, you know, doing this. I was." You know, working here. This is what I was doing before the world just went sideways with this whole pandemic. What was going on in those five states is there was just a full court press going on to liberalize euthanasia. They had, after many years of struggle, had just introduced a bill to the New York Assembly, signed by 30 co-sponsors. This sort of die with dignity bill. The other four states also had bills before the House. Just when things went wonky. Now, I am not suggesting that this was some sort of conspiracy on behalf of euthanasia freaks to do it. But
it could be.
It's very clear the more you get to know that community, the real monomaniacs, the people who have spent their lives trying to get more liberal medically assisted killing legislation, the more you look at that people, the more you look at the others, these people have a very low opinion of certain segments of society. And they very much want to direct the euthanasia at certain target populations. And if you look at the sort of the demographics of who they really want to bump off, they want to certainly the big push on now in Quebec. Not only have they, you know, dramatically legalized it, like far more than anywhere else in the country. There's a big push on now where they're going to old folks' homes and they're trying to get them to sign pre-consents, just in case the old person loses their marbles. And they will determine if there's any marbles. Like right now, 4% of all deaths in Quebec are induced. 4% of all deaths in the province.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And it's even higher because there's another thing called where they start giving older sick people just morphine and heroin. It doesn't kill them dead, but it rapidly speeds up the process. And that's not even counting them. Oh, you go to places like Holland, it's way beyond that now. I mean, in Quebec now, where it's already 4%, like, induced, like, we show up today at 2 o'clock, and that person's being put down. That's 4% of all deaths in Quebec. They want to dramatically increase that, and the key is to have old people sign these consents. Because the trouble now is they've got people who've got dementia, or so they say, and no longer can legally consent. So by getting large numbers to pre-consent, they're hoping to get that 4% up to, you know, where it is in like Holland, where it's well over 10% of all deaths now are induced.
Now,
so there's other places up.
Are they giving consent to family, or are they giving consent to the state to...
They're giving the consent to the state that should I lose my senses...
Holy cow.
Without any further ado, I can be put down.
Yeah.
And they are going to determine if you've got your, the skill testing questions. Like, here's your Rubik's Cube, Bill. You've got 5 minutes. hope you make it, man.
Yeah, that is frightening. Yeah, if they can...
Yeah, well, there's a big push on, because they don't want to pay for these people, okay?
Right.
It costs X number of dollars. So I'm sure somewhere deep in the bowels of the New York Reserve Building, there's somebody counting beans for every COVID-19 patient that gets killed. How much money did the state just save? Because that's another elderly person that isn't going to live for the next 7 or 8 years and run up an even larger tab.
Well, and that was during Obamacare, during that whole thing when they were trying to, they're still always trying to change the health system, but there was that big old discussion with Rahm Emanuel's brother, about, if you're 70, you've pretty much lived your life, so you're just basically
had a good life.
Yeah, you're hogging up space for other people, and it's like, wait a second.
We're from the federal government. Could you get in the cars there? Yeah. We're giving you a 70th birthday party down.
Yeah, we'll drive.
We have a black van coming through later this afternoon.
There was that one movie, Logan's Run, where you get to a certain age, you get bumped off. That's what these people are definitely thinking about. They're doing bean counters, and there's also a lot of classism and racism, all kinds of other stuff gets into this, but there's certainly segments of the population that, they are more than willing to bump off. And I'm not someone who's even really opposed to euthanasia. I think most people would say there are circumstances where it's okay. But when you see a place like Montreal, where the medical establishment is just wall-to-wall members of various pro-euthanasia organizations, and they start just cranking out thousands of corpses per month, then everyone should get leery.
That's
precisely the demographic cohort, really elderly people, the bedridden. They definitely want to bump those people off.
And that's where it always goes. It always ends up going there. Once you go down that road, pretty soon you end up with the 4%.
Well,
or
and
the
not
5%.
To put too fine a point in it, but let's also remember the other end of the spectrum, right? They've already absolutely captured the let's kill babies end. So the beginning, right?
They've
got them in some states all the way up to the moment of birth. So, they're kind of running out of rope there. And so now they've got to start working on the other end of the spectrum. God, I guess.
There's always been a very strong connection between like these extreme sort of euthanasia programs and the fascist movement. They've historically sort of viewed large segments of the population, sort of a life not worth living, and
I
read the history of it in Germany. It went from like over the course of I would say less than 8 years, the first euthanasia to a point where they were probably euthanizing 50,000 people a year. It was started at a few places, and it was clearly the bedridden dementia cases. And then they just kept broadening the horizon of it, year after year, and expanding the facilities. And once you've got a facility that's, cremating, 15, 20 people a day, and they already have these in Holland right now. I mean, there's a clinic in downtown Holland that cremates 750 people a year. And you come in one-stop shopping, you do the procedure there, you are put to death. They have put to death, and I'm not making this up, young women who are suffering from depression have consented to medically assisted suicide and have been put to death in Holland.
It's extremely
liberal there. Basically, anybody can walk in and say, I want to be put to death, and they will put you to death. And they're liberalizing it in Canada quite a bit. No longer in Canada is there a reasonable likelihood that you're going to die soon. That has been taken out of the law. So when they're determining whether or not to bump somebody off, he's saying, he's going to die in 6 months anyway. They don't care. They're just, they're really trying to ramp it up. It has a lot to do with pension plans and a lot to do with sort of managing state finances in an era when people are growing older and older. I think there's some really high-level bean counters that really are quite in favor of it. And euthanasia is an organized political movement. Just type in the word death with dignity, and you'll see there are chapters in every city and town.
Wow.
There's chapters in every state in the USA. And they're highly organized, and it's quite often people who run palliative care centers and people who run hospices and things like that.
Well, you look
it should be legal, but everyone should be leery of these groups.
Well, especially signing up ahead of time.
They're in the business of snuffing people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You sign up ahead of time and,
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you kind of might not want to put yourself on their radar.
Oh, yeah, you're crazy.
No, thank you. Really quick break, and we'll be back with our guest, William Kay. We can ponder during the break the Chinese and how they handled their COVID patients. They just brought in 40 incinerators, and their death count went way down. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah, we are in the Twilight Zone. Ashley sent me a message here right before the break that there was a Star Trek episode about people that were in a certain culture when they turned 65 and they were expected to just die.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one? I was not a Star Trek.
No, I didn't see that episode, which is kind of surprising because I thought I'd seen them all. But there is a movie called Logan's Run where at the age of 30 you get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it all depends on who thinks, you know, I mean, when you're 10, you think 30's old. When you're 58, for instance, I'm thinking 70's
think
looking
fancy
young.
Word, the fancy word is senicide, like S-E-N-I-C-I-D-E.
Yeah.
It is the murder of the old. It happens in a lot of cultures, you know, like putting grandma on the ice floe. You got to be careful with that. There are a lot of lawsuits. Like a lot of these old people, they take their money with them to the grave, right? So there's an estate, there's a will. And I was reading this one lawyer.
Oh,
there's a
geez,
lot of,
you don't even think of that. I'm not evil enough. I forgot about that.
People that they want granny's property. They don't want granny anymore. And so when you get into these mass euthanasia things, you got to watch it because those people start getting involved.
Yikes.
Like, why don't you bump her off so we can get access to this stuff?
For all the Star Trek people who are going to be frustrated now that we referenced an episode and didn't give you the details, Ashley tells us it's called Unnatural Selection. So I'm sure you can go find
okay.
that. There we go. So tie that up there.
That is. Well, no, if you get into the topic of femicide, then there's usually, they'll go to a place like Wikipedia, they'll list a variety of fiction sources where authors have talked about it. It's sort of something, it has something that's gone on in other societies where you would sort of, you know, in hunting and gathering societies or what have you, sort of bump off the elderly, take them for long walks and things like that.
Sure. Yeah, and see, in the past, they've
been doing it
story.
Here that much.
Yeah, it was a great story in the past because it never happened, but now all of a sudden it's becoming
part of
our society.
I think as a kid, like the first time you see that is what, like Old Yeller or something?
Well, I'm sure that the gnomes on top of this are you know, sort of, they're wrestling with the issue of, you know, modern medicine can keep people living for so much longer. We're putting ourselves into a crisis.
Oh, that's what they say. They have said that a bunch of times. But yeah, modern medicine
is
what's screwing it all up.
Well, obviously, one of the solutions is to really pop up that death rate amongst the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
One of the takeaway things from this whole pandemic is the demographic population that died is pretty much the same demographic population that the euthanasia advocates would have already bumped off had they had the sort of laws that they wanted, had they had the laws that they have in Holland or Montreal. In New York, those people would have already been gone. Because they've got professional counselors now that go around and talk to people. They can talk you into signing on the dotted line. In fact, the Death with Dignity group in Quebec, part of their manifesto is that people have a right to have professional counseling on end-of-life issues.
God, that is
like a professional persuader.
That's just like...
They've long done this with sterilization. Quite often, after a woman has had a birth, they've learned that the precise psychological technique, you can get the woman to consent to a sterilization right after a birth, particularly if it's a difficult birth, you get them to consent right on the table. So she'll be sterilized forever. Using that technique, they sterilized a third of all the women in Puerto Rico in the 1970s.
Well, you know, William, the other thing that kind of ties up with this is a guy that we've interviewed a bunch of times, and it's on Technocracy. And I'm just drawing a blank on his name, but he wrote a book called Technocracy Rising, I think. And in that technocracy movement, that was also one of their things that, Robert's giving me smoke signals.
Patrick Wood.
Yeah. Patrick Wood's his name. That ties up with what you're saying, because the technocrat, that's a society run by technocrats, which is what we've had for the last few months. No elected officials, just, you know, experts in their field. And their big thing was, end of life and also abortion. And they were sterilizing pretty much anybody that, you know, couldn't spell very well. Oh, you must be retarded. Bye-bye. You can't reproduce.
Spell sterilization.
Well, they...
And, use an S, buddy.
Well, yeah. And, you know,
line B.
Well, the
exactly. You line up over there. You'll be fine.
Well, the crazy part of that is, you know, most of the time people have, you know, researched this or whatever, but Patrick Wood is actually the adopted child of a woman who was sterilized during that time period when the technocrats, when that technocrat movement was going on, because her parents were sort of part of it, and they sterilized.
I think the figure right
the
now
daughter.
In the United States is 700,000 women a year are sterilized every year in the United States.
Isn't that nuts?
It's still very, and there's. I know a lot of women who've been talked into it by their doctors. There's once again, they've honed these persuasive conversation techniques. If you're going in for any kind of feminine surgery, you are going to get this calculated sales pitch to become sterilized. If you go in for any kind of abortion in the United States, you're going to get this very calculated sales pitch to become sterilized. They know what they're doing. They've honed this over 50, 60 years, these sales pitches.
Well, I'll tell you what, you ever check into a facility, a senior facility, and the counselor comes at you with, write the
paperwork,
you know,
for them to make decisions.
Yeah, don't check in.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, too, with this, I think this has caused a lot of people to rethink the senior living idea. You know, well, mom doesn't want to come and live with us because she doesn't want to be a burden, so she's happy in this facility. And whether that's true or not, I'm not going to make a judgment. But I do think families are going to take a much, much harder look at what happens with the seniors in their family. It's like, I think we're going to need to keep them a little closer to home.
It's a hard call. I mean, a lot of people, it's a lot of work to take care of some of these people. And I don't know, it's a really hard call. There was a lot of hypocrisy amongst the Democrats out on the East Coast, though, when they, a lot of them sent their parents, took their parents out of the old folks' home.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And sent them to private facilities and that. There were several four leading politicians that have done that, which typical from that crew.
Well, I think it was one of the health directors for one of the states back there pulled her mom out right before they started shipping.
It's almost like the, pull their money out of the stock market and then... To me, it's very similar.
Yeah, that's just evil. I can remember the article now, yeah.
Well.
But that's what you expect. I mean, the Democratic Party are, in some regions of the country, are approaching almost one-party statehood, and that's one of the underlying stories. Everywhere where you saw these really grotesque, massive COVID fatalities, which almost in every instance has been nursing home fatalities, You will find a region where there's a single party that is absolutely entrenched. You've got to be pretty confident of your position. You've got to know that your ass is going to be covered. before you would even contemplate something as crazy as patient seating at old folks' homes. So only people who were deeply entrenched in a political party where they knew that they're going to win the next election anyways would even think about this stuff. And the Democrats, they win elections by landslides across there.
God, and when we
60-80% of the vote.
Well, we've been speaking with a lot of Chinese dissidents over the last year and a half, not realizing how interesting that would actually make this whole pandemic with all the information we've gathered. But I really do hope people go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us and click on the China tab and look down through those topics, because there are a bunch of them for the last, like, 18 months or so. And some of them were exactly what you're just talking about. All those same things totally laid out, and they have verified all of that 100 ways from Sunday, and the Chinese wrote the book on a lot of this stuff. So
yeah, it's a highly authoritarian society. Yep. I don't for better or worse,
doctrine.
You know, I mean, it's gonna. I'm not really much of a China basher. My focus has been on the fiascos here.
Yeah,
there certainly had they reported things in a prompter fashion, I think it would have reduced it. But then I'm just looking at what's happening here on this. If you look from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it's day and night.
Yeah, one of our Chinese guests, though, he literally looked at all the demographics, and he looked at the political parties and the epidemic, and he did the math. He's a microbiologist, so I think they just are addicted to math. But he did the math on what you just were saying, who was managing those areas under these kinds of things and how they kind of helped themselves get away with
it. That determines what your body count is.
Yep, it really did.
It's the response. It's what the rulers did in that area. Made a huge
spooky
difference. Like, you know, 15 times as much fatalities. That's the difference between New York and California.
Yeah. Oh, William, thank you.
That is not some sort of, like, foible. I mean, it's not like they're 15% higher. No,
yeah,
1,500% higher.
That is downright creepy.
That has to be explained.
We have to jump off, but we're going to talk to you guys, or to you again, because our folks love you, and we think you're super smart, so thanks a million. Have fun in Alberta, and we'll talk to you soon.
Will do.
Our guest, William Kay, you were listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.